To music, you might want to go ahead and dig yourself up a Groovy Grubworm, because that's the title of this next one, Groovy Grubworm by Harlow Wilcox. And a large welcome to you. Now, this program is rated G, meaning it's for you, the grooviest. If movies interest you, if you sometimes wonder why there are dirty movies despite the rating system, listen for a few enlightening discussions on that in just a few minutes. And in just a few minutes, we want you to try a little kindness when it comes to the type of movie discussed. Glenn Campbell coming up for you now.
Standing by the road with a heavy load, he's so good. And if you see the sister falling by the way, just stop and say, you've gone the wrong way. You've got to find a little kindness. Hey!
Timeless with the courtesy of Glenn Campbell. Say, when was the last time you saw a movie you thought was downright pornographic? Did you come out of the theater wondering how and why it could be shown in the first place? Well, we may be able to clear that up for you. Here's an interview with Jack Valenti, who was a former special assistant to President Johnson and now president of the Motion Pictures Association, who talked with Gene DiCardo of station KNBR in San Francisco.
Why, in your estimation, are there so many, in quotes, dirty movies being shown? Here in San Francisco, it's difficult to avoid that type of film.
Every community will get what it wants and receive what it deserves. If there are a lot of, quote, dirty movies playing in San Francisco, if that is true, it must be because San Franciscans like dirty movies. You see, people complain about the movies, but you must remember that you must leave your home, you must get into your car, you must drive to a movie house, you must get out, you must buy a ticket. It costs money. And then you go in to see that movie. Movies are not brought to you, you go to movies. Therefore, I must be persuaded that people who go to see that kind of movie must want to see that kind of movie. There's no law that says they must go in.
Assuming that there is a demand for this type of movie, what do you see it doing to the movie industry in Hollywood?
Well, I think it's hurting the movie industry in Hollywood because I think the responsible movie makers, if I may say so, are very much hard-pressed to meet this kind of competition. Now, let me explain why. I hear all the time that there are no family movies available, and yet I can cite you specifics, if I chose, of so-called family movies that go into a community like San Francisco, Los Angeles, Houston, New York, Atlanta, and literally die. Nobody wants to see them. The complaints come that there are not enough family movies. But I've said that the shortage is not in family movies, but in family audiences.
Is there anything that movie makers can do? We've been told that do they follow the trend or set the trend in public taste?
Well, I think that they are followers of trends, not setters of trends. However, I think I must make one thing clear. That while you may see advertised in the San Francisco papers a good many so-called dirty movies, many of these are made by one-picture companies, and that's the only picture they're making, and they're purely, and I think gratuitously, trying to incite that kind of public taste. But the vast majority of pictures made today, by far the overwhelming majority, are pictures that really children can see or parents can take their children to see. We have rated over 415 movies since the rating system began. 70% are G and M ratings, which means unrestricted, which means children can go in with or without their parents. 25% are R films, which means that the children can go in with their parents. And only 5% are X films. Now, the many of the films being shown here in San Francisco are films which don't even go through the rating system, but self-apply the severest rating, which is X. But overwhelmingly, most of the pictures made today are not, quotes, dirty, not, quotes, purulent, but really serious statements of an attempted work of art.
What is the dividing line between a good, mature movie and something that borders on pornographic?
Well, let me give you some examples. Now, I think a movie like Midnight Cowboy is a serious statement of art. Now, it depicts some of the sordid and squalid parts of human existence. But it is not, it doesn't attempt to be salacious or play on your purulent interest. It tries, in my judgment, to make a serious statement about the form of life that it depicts. Easy Rider today is a film made by two young people about the drug culture, but done in a way that is honest, I believe, and tries to say something with as much accuracy and honesty as possible. On the other hand, there are films which I don't know some of their names even because they're not well known to me, but I've seen several where it is strictly sex, 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 where there's nothing but a vainglorious attempt to exalt sex for sex's sake without, if you'll pardon the legal expression, any socially redeeming value.
That was president of the Motion Picture Association, Jack Valenti, speaking with reporter Gene DiCardo in San Francisco. And right now we're going to take you into another dimension, the fifth dimension, and their Wedding Bell Blues which Laura Nero wrote and which they perform for you right now. And Wedding Bell Blues. Back at Monitor, and the latest by Steve Lawrence coming up. It's the Drifter.
Once again, there's a feeling inside of me, nothing new. I've heard it before. Like the voice of a hunger inside of me, crying out, is that little more? I put my faith in the arms of an open road. And you can tell no wrong if it's true. Cause there's places that I've never been to.
Steve Lawrence, Murray the K here with you, telling you that this week at Columbia College, which of course is part of Columbia University in New York, students were warned that they face disciplinary action for misuse of drugs. Now, the new policy statement was made by the dean of the college, who said that discipline would not be limited to drugs such as heroin or hallucinogenics, that distinctions had to be made, but that penalties in the immediate future would apply to marijuana. Now, there are varying views, of course, on the use of marijuana, and that is discussed in this report by Dr. Donald B. Loria, president of the Council on Drug Addiction.
Recently, on the East Coast, the president of a college student body suggested publicly that what we really ought to do is legalize the use of marijuana until its potential dangers were established. To me, that's an absolute invitation to disaster. One can argue and argue forcefully that we know that the dangers of marijuana are limited, and therefore our laws are anachronistic, our approach to it unrealistic. I think that's a sensible argument. But the argument that we should legalize drugs of pleasure until we know their danger makes absolutely no sense at all. If this were ever done, what we would be opting for would be thousands upon thousands of tragedies. Then we would have every and any drug that any pressure group wanted for pleasure purposes foisted on the public without adequate information, without adequate education, and then we would have an enormous number of serious complications. It would be tragedy to legalize marijuana or any other drug without knowing the dangers fully. I would emphasize, I am not suggesting that we do not now know a great deal about marijuana. We do. We know enough to legislate. We know enough to make sensible regulations. Let's stop this nonsense about legalizing drugs of pleasure prior to the time that we know their dangers. This obviously is a wrong system of priorities. This is Donald B. Loria for Monitor.
And this is Mary Decay back here on Monitor, and you just heard a reaction to the suggestion that marijuana be legalized. And I can tell you, as part of the President's Council on Drug Abuse, that every one of the major agencies in the country right now are taking up that particular subject of whether or not to change the laws on what the laws should be. Let's change the subject and change the scene. And let's go to the Sound of Love with the Peppermint Rainbow.
I'm
Peppermint Rainbow and the Sound of Love, and we hope you enjoyed that ride. And speaking about rides, you've heard about joy rides, I'm sure. That's when you go out and have a little pleasure. But the kind of joy ride I am referring to right now is when a youngster sort of borrows a car that doesn't belong to him and does it just for kicks. Now, that isn't the biggest crime in the world, but it's a start. And our prisons are filled with men who started that way. We kids who couldn't resist the temptation to steal a car, then we just went on to more serious crime. Well, don't you help a good boy go bad. Whenever you park, even for a few moments, lock your car, take your keys. And this message from the U.S. Department of Justice. Unlimited, the soulful samba, Murray the K with your kind of sounds on monitor nationwide. Our station in Elmira, New York is WENY, and that station serves southern New York and northern Pennsylvania. You stay right where you are, yeah? I'll be back. Monitor and Mary the K. Welcome. And as the man once said, you ain't heard nothing yet, baby. But of course you have, and there's lots more waiting for you. Joe Gradiola will join us in a few minutes. And of course, earlier in the show, we had Joe Namath on and Bill Mathis at the scene of Shea Stadium. And he'll be talking about the Shea Stadium game coming up. In the meantime, we got a mama here, a mama Cass. And like she says, you got to make your own kind of music and do your own kind of thing.
glass and make your own kind of music. And okay, you sports fans, we promised you Joe Gargiulo. You got him.
What man faces the toughest challenge in sports right now? Well, my nomination is a guy named Johnny McCarthy. Maybe you've never heard of him, but I don't think you'll completely disagree with me. You see, Johnny McCarthy is the head of the ground crew at New York Shea Stadium, which is the home of the New York Mets. When the Mets won the World Series on Thursday, it touched off demonstrations all over town. But the biggest one was in the ballpark itself. Everybody wanted a souvenir. Now, what kind of souvenir can you get from an open ball field? Chunks of grass, for one thing, and the Mets fans help themselves. Compared to Shea Stadium on Thursday, the moon looks as smooth as a skating rink. From an airplane, Shea Stadium must look like a broken jigsaw puzzle. The dirt part of the infield suddenly shows up out near the left field fence. Now, you might say that since the Mets won't be back until next spring, that Johnny McCarthy isn't really under pressure. But the fact is that on Monday night, Joe Namath and the New York Jets are scheduled to play the Houston Oilers in Shea Stadium. The Jets expect the field to be playable. When your fortunes are tied to anything as fragile as Joe Namath's knee, it's natural that you don't want him stumbling around on the chewed-up field. But this is an important game, too. In the American League's Eastern Division, two teams are tied for first place, and those are the two teams that play in Shea Stadium on Monday night. With all the emphasis that's been put on the World Series, it might be tough to realize, but there is a football season going on. As a matter of fact, it's nearing the halfway mark. The games coming up are number six for each team in the AFL. And for some, the signs are already on the wall. Miami, for example, has only a tie to show for their first five games. Boston doesn't even have that. As far as the standings are concerned, only one game figures to be very important, and that's the one on Monday night. Houston and New York players are hoping for the kind of game that can put them on top of their division. Johnny McCarthy is just hoping they can have a nice grassy field to play on. This is Joe Gargiulo from Monitor Sports.
Okay, Joe the G, Murray the K, thanks thee. And right now, here's a young fella who had a hit with Good Morning Starshine. He's got somebody else right now he's interested in. Very lovely thing called.
To the top of the hill. Come.
17 minutes before the hour. Mary the K, here at Monitor. Now, I've said it before, and I'll go on record again. The group that you're about to hear is the top group in the country right now. And as I speak to you, they are preparing to go on stage for a concert at Notre Dame University, where they had quite a game this afternoon, tied up with USC 14-14. Maybe they'll break the tie with this one. This is their latest, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, with a song written by Laura Nero. It's called, And When I Die.
I'm not scared of dying, and I don't really care if it keeps you finding dying. Well, then, let the time be near. If it keeps you finding dying, and if dying time is near, just bundle up my coffin, cause it's cold way down there. I hear that it's cold way down there, yeah. Crazy cold way down there.
David Clayton Thomas doing lead sing with Blood, Sweat, and Tears and When I Die. And right now, on Monitor, College Poll, a nationwide sampling of student opinions and attitudes, reported by Bill Ryan.
Student reactions to open dorms and mixed dorms are also mixed. College Poll went to students with this question. Would you like to live in a dormitory with members of the opposite sex? 4 out of 10 said yes. Men preferred the idea more than women. Half the males polled said yes. Only 30% of the ladies polled went for the idea of mixed living quarters. A Penn State sophomore said, there's nothing worse than being caught in curlers. A junior at Miami University, presumably a lady, said, I'd have to buy a whole new wardrobe. My robe is a mess. At North Carolina State, a junior said, every girl would be aware of your date every minute. It's like being married. A male junior at Stanford said, I like them accessible, but not next door or down the hall. Some students felt it would improve their social lives. Most students polled said they did not think mixed dorms would promote a loosening of morality. They indicated such a policy would lead to less sex rather than more. A senior at Florida State said, living quarters are not going to change people's morality or personalities.
The student went on, it does create a more relaxed attitude and almost a brother and sister relationship on campus. Whatever sex there is here is off the campus, not on, and there's a lot less than people think. Well, today's college population is adjusting to a more open way of life. The college students now have the choice of closer proximity to the other sex, and that is what is news. Bill Ryan, NBC News for Monitor.
Of course, proximity does mean nearness, but it doesn't always breed closeness between people. For an example, I don't think many fellows who see a girl running around the dormitory in hair rollers would want to get any closer to her than that. Of course, I wouldn't bet against it either. Here's something that I know you're going to like listening to. It's another pick of the week for you. Here's Lana Cantrell's new song, Tomorrow is the First Day of the Rest of My Life.
Lana Cantrell with you with Mary Decay on Monitor with more football scores in their finals. In the South, Tennessee 41, Alabama 14. We know now who is the powerhouse in the South. Florida 52, North Carolina 2. Auburn beat Georgia Tech 17-14. TCU 16, Texas A&M 6. Clemson 28, Wake Forest 14. North Carolina State 31, Virginia nothing. South Carolina 17, Virginia Tech 16. And Florida State 38, Tulsa 20. In the West, Indiana 41, Illinois 20. Kansas State 34, Iowa State 7. Michigan State upset Michigan 23-12. Ohio State 34, Minnesota 7. Missouri 31, Oklahoma State 21. Nebraska 21, Kansas 17. And Northwestern had a mild upset by defeating Wisconsin 27-7. And Notre Dame and USC played to a 14-14 tie. Oklahoma 42, Colorado 30, and Purdue
35, Iowa 31. Out in the far west, Air Force was a 10-point favorite. They beat Oregon 60-13. Stanford 42, Washington State nothing, and UCLA 32, California nothing, Oregon State 10, and Washington 6. And those are the scores for you right here on NBC Monitor. And, you know, speaking of football, tomorrow, the New York football Giants are an 8-point underdog to the Washington Redskins. And being a dreamer and a Giant fan, I still believe in tomorrow. Here's John and Ann Ryder. Believe in tomorrow, John and Ann Ryder for you. You know, for some weird reason, I never gave much thought to how much fun it would be to ride a shark. Sounds like a sharp idea to you. Okay, now you can find out how from an underwater diver who will be one of our guests on Monitor tomorrow afternoon. You'll also hear the famous movie director George Cukor talk about some of the great actresses. Judy Garland is one of them. Also on Monitor tomorrow, when Joe the G will be your host, some travel notes on Hawaii, Sardinia, and southern France, and a report on the case of the Chippewa Indians versus the state of Wisconsin. Who you betting on? Ponteo, Pat Williams. Wrong, to it. Ponteo, Pat Williams played it. News coming up here on Monitor, then we'll groove some more. Don't go away, Mary Decay wants you to stay.